Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's Love Letters time with the Boston Globe's Love Letters columnist, Meredith Goldstein. But to introduce this month's letter, though, let's first listen to this.
He constantly is saying when he's in Iraq that he feels bad he's not around to pick up his duties as a husband and a father and as a son. David's been able to spend 3 weeks total with Tori, being able to hold her and stuff. He talks to her on the phone. Sometimes it's been really hard being the only one to get up in the middle of the night. I got a lot of help, but definitely would have been nice to have my husband around.
Well, that's a scene from the show Real Army Wives, because this month's letter is about marriage and the military. So, Meredith, who wrote to you and what did she say?
Well, a young woman who calls herself In Love and War in the South End wrote me a note that said that, you know, she's been a military girlfriend for 5 years, and on Valentine's Day, she got a proposal, and she does want to marry this man she's been with, but she doesn't want to marry the military. She loves her partner, but she just can't sign on for a life like this. And my answer to her when she asked me what should I do was, if you marry this man, it is marrying the military. You know, she found out from him that he does plan to reenlist. He told her that when he proposed. And to me, you know, you can't have one without the other. And if you know you can't live a military lifestyle, you have to find someone else. I just, you know, to me, it's not an area for compromise. And after 5 years, she knows what she's getting into.
Yeah. In fact, in the 5 years that they've been dating, she says he has been deployed twice since we've been together. He just returned from his latest deployment. And obviously, she was very happy to have him home safe and alive. But then she says, she seems very cognizant. She says, yeah. I don't know if I can handle the military life forever. The thought of moving from base to base, never having roots, and always having a chance of losing the love of my life breaks my heart. So,
yeah. I mean, to me, it was great that she's so self-aware about this and saying, you know, I've done this. I'm not going to romanticize it. I know I don't want to do more of it. And here he's telling me he's going to reenlist. So to me, unless he can, you know, sort of compromise with her and say, you know, I don't have to keep doing this, or we'll live here or there. And there's only so much compromising you can do if you're in the military and that's the lifestyle you want. So my advice to her was, after 5 years, if you know you can't do this, you can't pretend that this is what you want.
Well, listeners, we definitely want to hear from you. If you are a military spouse or a member of the military yourself, if you have, you know, a significant other who is in the military, or maybe you decided not to date someone because you didn't want to marry the military. Overall, I'm just curious, how do you make things work when you or the person you love also has a major life commitment that's as unique as military service is? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also comment at our website, radioboston.org. Essentially, how would you counsel this woman who wrote to Meredith? She signs herself In Love and War from the South End. Again, the number is 1-800-423-8255. And to give us a little more insight into life in the military and military families, we're joined in the studio now by Lieutenant Colonel Paul Miner. He's the Joint Forces Chaplain for the National Guard based in Milford. Lieutenant Colonel Miner, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's really great to have you. And I should say, you not only counsel military families, but I understand that you just celebrated your 25th wedding anniversary yourself.
It's coming up in June.
Congratulations to that. Well, do you mind if I just start with you and sort of, given the fact that you have your own marital history and military history, how have you and your family dealt with the career that you've chosen?
Well, military life has been a major part of my family life, and with deployments, 2 overseas deployments, and a trip to New Orleans in the wake of the storm there, it has had a major impact, not only on my wife but on my children. It's a major part of our family narrative. And that there has been suffering in the separation, but also there's been a closeness, there's been a growth in pride, a greater sense of being part of a military family. And so there is that combination of difficulty, of suffering, but also of an increase in independence and resilience as we've come through these things as individuals and as a family.
Mm-hmm. And so when young soldiers come to you and say, I have this person that I'm dating, and you know, I want to take it to the next level, but they're not sure if they want to be with someone who is in the military, what do you tell them? How do you counsel them?
Most often my exposure is to service members, and we do a lot of work in the area called Strong Bonds, helping to build relationships with married couples, taking them away for retreat weekends, and also with single soldiers. One of the Army curriculum and other branches use this as well, is in the dating process and thinking about issues of commitment and helping to build strong relationships. And part of that is getting to know the person and understanding, you know, how does the military play out in that person's life? Is it an important part of their life? And as in this letter, is this person planning to stay for 20 years or longer? That would be part of the conversation that would need to happen. And then there's opportunities to be exposed to military life. We do a lot of work with family members, and so girlfriends or boyfriends or potential spouses would have an opportunity to be exposed to military life and to all the kind of benefits and resources that are there and the kind of community that's there to support people.
You know, one question I had when I received this letter, you know, this young woman says, I do want to marry this man, but not the military. Is there such a thing as marrying someone who's in the military and not marrying the whole organization, the whole institution, and the lifestyle? Can you separate a person from the military once that's the community that they've joined up with? You know, is it possible for her to marry this man and not feel as though she has married the military?
It would be hard. It'd be similar to saying, you know, I'm going to marry you, but don't want to have anything to do with your family, wherever mm-hmm. you've come from. It is a part of that person's identity. And so for this person and probably everyone, there's a soul searching that has to happen. She's been with him for 5 years. And the first part is thinking, okay, what does this mean to me? I know what this is like. I've lived through deployments with him. Can I live this way? What is the level of commitment? And then exploring options. He may not have to stay on active duty forever. There's the Guard and Reserve. There's some that do that full time. They don't have to move around. She mentioned that. There's traditional guard where they would drill, still would be the deployments. And so those are the kinds of conversations, looking first inwardly and then having real communication with her fiancé about what his goals are, so she would have a better understanding of what this level of commitment is.
So, that's a conversation that the two of them need to have together. Are there sort of services within the military that her boyfriend could, you know, turn to and you know, tell her, like, say, hey, there's Lieutenant Colonel Miner who's, I've been talking to about this. You want to come and chat with us? Like, support services already in the military.
Yes, there are abundant services that are available. And this issue of, I mentioned strong bonds a few moments ago, those kinds of an effort really that reflects the nation's effort to try to do what we can to build strong relationships. One of the things that increasingly as I do this work that seems very unnatural to me is that it is unnatural to go away from people that you love and to go to a dangerous place. And so we do whatever we can to try to help families live through that process in a way that increases independence, increases a sense of resilience and being part of a strong military family.
There's a lot of listeners who want to join us. Once again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are talking about love letters today and this question of can you marry a soldier but not marry the military? Let's go to Dorchester. Karen's calling. You're welcome to Radio Boston, Karen.
Hi, thank you. I can't believe I'm calling in on the talk show. but I am married to a National Guard member who was just deployed with the most recent deployment from Massachusetts. He's in Atterbury now, but this will be his third deployment in 5 years and his second deployment to Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And they've been about a year each.
Wow.
And what would you say to this letter writer who says, you know, can I marry this person without marrying the military? I mean, what have you found to be the case?
She can't marry him without marrying the military. I didn't marry the military. Actually, I met my husband in the Peace Corps, believe it or not. Huh. And he rejoined the military after being in the military when he was a young man, and he had gotten out, and he rejoined after September 11th because he felt he wanted to do something for the nation. And I didn't understand at the time what I was getting into, but you can't marry a man without marrying the military, and I think it would be a horrible way to start a marriage, to be honest with you.
Oh, really? So, Karen, I mean, since your husband sort of rejoined after you'd met him and formed a relationship with him, and those three deployments, I mean, how has it been for you and him?
It's hard. It's much harder. It's much harder than Peace Corps, I'll tell you that. It's been extremely difficult, and I have two kids. My son was 7 when he first deployed, and my daughter's older. She's 23 now. but it's been horrible on all of us. And I think being in the National Guard, it makes it even harder because you don't live on a base and you're very isolated. I tried to get help for me and my son from Military One Source, and the person and I played phone tag for a whole bunch of time. And then, you know, I actually haven't found the services there for people. There's something called an FRG, a family readiness group, but it meets once a month for, you know, a couple of hours. It meets all the way out in Wellesley. So it's not convenient.
It's tough, you know,
it's just,
yeah.
It's very difficult.
Karen, thank you so much for your call. Lieutenant Colonel Miner, Karen's actually, she's opened my eyes to like the differences that maybe families think are available to them based on if they're National Guard or Reserve, et cetera. I mean, are there more, if you're on active duty, more support available or not?
Well, she mentioned being on a military installation that would provide resources that would be there locally. And part of the national commitment, though, has been to make those resources available for the reserve components for National Guard as well. She mentioned Military One Source as a clearinghouse where there are free counseling services that are available. And also for those who, particularly during the deployment, there'd be the option of being on military and health insurance, and that provides counseling resources both during the deployment and after the deployment as well. And then the Veterans Affairs provides vet centers, and that would include relationship counseling for post-deployment issues as well.
Let's get another call in here. Mike is calling from Wrentham. You're on the air, Mike.
Hi. I'm a relatively recently discharged vet. I got out of the Air Force last August, and during my time in, I saw some pretty bad situations develop between married couples, and one of the situations did involve murder. I just want to throw in there that I think that she should seriously consider that at some point the military career will be over. At some point, her boyfriend will no longer be an airman, a soldier, or a Marine, a sailor, and that the marriage commitment and the marriage term is longer than the military term. Even if he does rise up to like a 3-star general in 30 years.
Mike, I'm sorry, I don't mean to backtrack into your story, but I want to make sure I understand you correctly. When you say one of the situations involved murder, that there was like violence in the marriage? Or
yes.
Okay.
Well,
and
you know, I also have to wonder, you know, what you're saying here is that, you know, after a long military career, you are still married. Of course, that's the case. But if it's going to be a 30-year military career, that's a good portion of one's marriage. And, you know, one question I had with that last caller is, you know, here was someone who chose to join up with the military after getting married. So I do wonder what services are available for people considering joining for the first or second time when they've already made a marital commitment. To what extent does it have to be a mutual decision? You know, obviously you have to balance recruiting with, you know, making sure that families are consulting one another. You know, what is the responsibility of the military to make sure that it's the right decision to join for a person who already has a family and a spouse?
Most of the people that join post 9/11, of course, are joining with the awareness that there are deployments, whether it's active duty or in the reserve component as well, and so that's generally on the table. I think of many parents and spouses, fiancés that I see at farewell ceremonies. One of the callers talked about the recent one. I was there on Sunday, and seeing the faces of those people as they prepare for that, the fear of death or injury, the sense of separation. And so on our part, for example, the pre-deployment, we invite family members to come and be aware of the kind of resources that are available to provide for them in a whole host of ways, not just in terms of counseling, but if they want to start a small business, what kind of educational resources are available. Under the new GI Bill, they can transfer their GI benefits to their spouse or to their children. So those kinds of exposures are there. And so we work hard to try to encourage family members to come to those. We don't always get 100%, but that's an effort that's ongoing.
You know, Lieutenant Colonel, I also wanted to ask you about, you know, the point of view from the soldier, the airman, the sailor, or the Marine while they're on deployment. Because obviously, I mean, you've been on deployment multiple times, and these are very long commitments, oftentimes very, very dangerous, because so much changes for their spouse, their family at home, and they're not part of that change. So what kind of support or what kind of advice do members of the military get when they are away from their families, you know, at war, essentially, about coming back home?
Well, on some level, the effort is made. There are presentations that are made, and often I wonder, particularly with our young men and women, how effective that communication is and whether they're ready to hear about those things. And then we work with family members as well in anticipation of return home. And then those same kind of gatherings that are there that happen before the deployment where the family members are invited in, we invite them again. I'll be at one this weekend, as a matter of fact. And they've heard some of these presentations, and I'll be doing one that I often do, speaking just with troops about the redeployment issues, the reconnecting issues, that it's a long process. This unit's been back for a while, but the coming home is a process. And then we have the family members. They'll be having a separate meeting run in part by our state director of psychological health, talking about those reunion issues.
Yeah.
And so the effort's there. And again, part of the process, particularly for people in the reserve component, is to say, well, you know, this is a part-time job, but this is my family member, and so I should come to that because this is impacting me.
So you mentioned the sort of the coming home process. We actually have a cut from the PBS documentary Carrier. A documentary team was aboard the USS Nimitz for a deployment that Carrier was on. And this is a scene from when they're you know, really just days away from returning from a long sail, and they're having one of these sort of coming home consultations with someone's basically guiding the sailors, like, here are the things you need to think of when you step off that ship and back onto land. Let's listen.
So for your homecoming, who's going to greet you at the pier? Chances are it's going to be mom and baby. Who are you going to approach first? Your wife's first. She's the one you fell in love with. She's the one you're going to be with. Give her the hug, give her the flowers, and then check out your new baby. And if no one else has told you this already, don't be the one person that comes down the pier without the flowers.
That's again from the PBS documentary Carrier. And Lieutenant Colonel Minor and Meredith, I have to say, I found that scene, I was completely riveted by that scene
because when
you think about it, here are, you know, in this case, young men who've been away. They've had a baby. Their wife has had a baby while they're gone. And yet they're counseled the first thing, the most important thing to do is to reconnect with their wife
child. Don't forget the flowers. I mean, I always think about a close friend of mine who married a Marine, and she said, you know, the hardest thing was him coming home and not knowing how I put the dishes away. All these things she hadn't anticipated. She was so ready for him to come home, but forgot she'd been living like a single person, you know, for the better part of a year. So all these things you don't anticipate, but flowers, flowers are a must.
Lieutenant Colonel, those basic things, like they seem like they're really essential and important to remember, and it's, you know, those are things you have to remind soldiers when they've been away for a long time?
Well, I like that clip because it did talk about the importance of the marital relationship, and that, of course, provides a great environment for the children as well, and that was a good focus.
Let's get another call in here. Drew's calling from Worcester. Welcome to Radio Boston, Drew.
Hi. So I grew up in a military family. I lived in Korea, in Germany. My father was in the military. And when I heard the letter, all I could think is that we're lucky in the United States. We don't have a draft. This boyfriend, he has a choice. And the girlfriend in this letter shouldn't forget that the boyfriend is choosing a career over her. And that this is something that military families experience, and rightly so, that in the United States, there's not a duty to go off to foreign wars or occupations, that it's a choice.
It's interesting. You bring up the choice, and you also bring up the family, you know, in which you were raised. One question I had was, is it easier for people to date someone in the military when they've been exposed to it, when
beforehand,
they've seen that choice before and they've been brought up to have a different kind of respect for it?
Have you found that, Lieutenant Colonel?
I found that to be the case. And also, even in my own relationship, my wife did not have an exposure to that. And I remember having those conversations. She said, this is completely foreign to me, and I don't understand this world at all.
I want to get one last call in here. Walter is calling from Wakefield. You're on the air, Walter.
Oh, hi, good afternoon. I had an unusual thing. I've been in the service now for 20 years, 10 active duty. Coming from Massachusetts especially, there isn't a big military presence. So when I decided to go into the service, my wife's family and mine thought we were nuts. I got married, and 2 weeks later, I was down in Pensacola for flight training, so there was a huge gap there, but we went through that. But my whole active duty time was with just my wife and I, and it was hard to go through and do that. But just in the past year, I deployed as a reservist for a year as an individual augmentee with family who had never experienced me being away.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the most difficult thing, but, you know, I think there was a huge sense of pride and a lot of benefit from it. My family has a whole new perspective on things. So we've been through the gamut, and it's I think for anybody, it's a great opportunity. It's a great lifestyle if you enjoy it. But there is, you know, it's, you can play both sides and get a civilian career out of it and military.
Walter, thank you so much for your call. We're just about out of time here. So, Lieutenant Colonel Miner, your last thoughts on what to do with? I presume there's lots of people out there who are facing this question: can I marry someone and not marry the military?
And the last caller said a great thing. The experiences. Sometimes I'm with families during mid-deployment, and I ask them, as hard as this has been, is there things about this that have been good that you want to keep? Have there been experiences? And always there's a conversation that happens when I ask that question.
Lieutenant Colonel Paul Miner, he's the Joint Forces Chaplain for the National Guard, stationed at the Massachusetts National Guard Joint Force Headquarters in Milford. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Meredith Goldstein, columnist for Love Letters with the Boston Globe. Always great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back after a short break, but coming up, a report from Arlington, Texas. What on earth could be going on in Texas today? I don't know. But first, WBUR's spring fundraiser is quickly coming to a close, but we can't end successfully without your help. I'm Megan Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks, and here is WBUR's Deborah Becker to tell you more.